From WXXI News and WEOS News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made on the beach on Keuka Lake. The owner of a small cottage was getting ready to go for an afternoon swim when he noticed something in the water. Maybe you would call it pea soup or a swirl of green paint. Whatever it was, he didn't know if he should jump in. This mysterious algae has forced beaches to close and summer camps to limit the hours when kids can swim. The substance is known as a HAB, H-A-B. That's a term you'll hear often this hour. It stands for harmful algal bloom. There's a lot we know about it, but plenty we don't know. These blooms showed up in Seneca Lake several years ago, and they have become more persistent and a more persistent problem this summer in Keuka Lake. But now they can show up in water all across the Finger Lakes and beyond. You've probably seen stories about these algal blooms on Lake Ontario as well. Well, on Monday night, some of the experts are coming together to answer public questions on the campus of Keuka College. And this hour, we'll do our best to solve some of these mysteries, answer some of those questions, and we'll outline the questions that are still unanswered. Where are these blooms coming from? What kind of harm can they do to people and pets? And what can we do to eliminate them? Are they really related to climate change? I'd like to welcome my guest for the hour. It's Jim Howe. He's the director of the Nature Conservancy in Central and Western New York. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Megan. Nice to be here again.
And a little later in the hour, we'll be joined by Tim Sellers, Associate Provost for Academic Innovation, Professor of Biology and Environmental Science, and Director of the Center for Aquatic Research at Keuka College. He's joining us from our studio in WEOS. And listeners, if you have questions this hour, Jim and Dr. Sellers can help us answer them. You can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email your questions to connections@WXXI.org. And you can also find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. At the end of the last hour, I made a comment about talking about algae and how that would be fun. That was not meant to be sarcastic at all. It was just a shift from the last hour. Algae's fun, right, Jim?
Well, that depends, I think, who you talk to.
Well, this hour, you're going to help us understand a lot about these harmful algal blooms that I'm sure many of our listeners have seen, and maybe they just don't know what they were looking at. So if you were to describe one, what does it look like?
Well, they are very small cellular organisms. And what you see when you notice them is you're seeing a bloom or an outbreak of them. They are the conditions in the water have allowed them to thrive and to outcompete other species. And that's one of the things we should talk about today. What are the conditions that are actually bringing about these outbreaks, these blooms of blue-green algae, harmful algal blooms in the Finger Lakes? It is now becoming, as you said, a persistent problem. Last year, for the first time ever, we had all 11 Finger Lakes had a blue-green algae outbreak. That's really unusual because in the past, they were limited to some of the shallower lakes, some of the warmer lakes. We can talk more about that, too. I think we are seeing now a change in what's happening. Something is different now in the Finger Lakes. And actually, it's not just the Finger Lakes. It's all around our region and even all around the world. And we can talk more about symptoms, too, what's causing it.
Are these the same kind of algal blooms that we're seeing on Lake Ontario, which was a big problem last year, continues to be a problem? Are they the same type of organism?
Yeah, they are related. They are cyanobacteria, blue-green algae. They have been seen in some of the bays along Lake Ontario. Sotus Bay has had some outbreaks. So it is. They're very similar species, yes.
And do you usually find them closer to the shore? Do you find them out in the middle of the lake? Is it everywhere?
Are
they most prevalent?
There's a few things that they really like. First of all, let's set the table a bit and say they've been around for billions of years. They are native species to our region. So this is not an invasive species that's come over here somehow. They've always been present. What they need to survive is they need food, first of all. That's nutrients. In this case, it's usually phosphorus. They need light. They need sunlight because they are photosynthesizers, if that's a word. I think it is. They also need warm temperatures. They really thrive when the water is warm. And they also, finally, need calm days with low wind, which allows them to float up to the surface and get that sunlight. So those are the things that really go into a blue-green algae outbreak. We are seeing, I think, the nutrients is what's driving blue-green algal outbreaks in our Finger Lakes. We're seeing a lot of nutrients in our water. And I would say, you mentioned climate earlier, I think climate change is another key driver here, in that we're seeing more and more of our rainfall and precipitation is coming in these intense downbursts. I mean, witness yesterday.
Yesterday, Seneca Lake. Absolutely.
Yeah, Seneca County, 9 inches of rainfall in a six-hour period. If you think about our rainfall, our precipitation in this region, we get about 36 inches of rain a year on average. So fully 25% of our precipitation this year came in that one storm in Seneca County for that region.
And that creates better conditions for the algae to become more perpetual? Help us understand how the rain contributes to that.
That's a great question. So what that's doing, those intense rainfalls are really scouring the landscape, scouring creek beds, forcing all kinds of runoff into the lake, sediments, tree branches, propane tanks, I understand in some cases. Those aren't a problem for blue-green algae. But the sediments they usually are binding phosphorus. So phosphorus and nitrogen is unattached to those sediments. And these storms are moving massive amounts of sediment into the Finger Lakes, into our waterways, that we haven't experienced before. And that, I think, is one of the key drivers of what's making of putting more nutrients into the lake, creating a better growing environment for these blue-green algae.
Joining us from our studio in WEOS at WEOS is Dr. Tim Sellers. He's the Associate Provost for Academic Innovation, a professor of biology and environmental science, and director of the Center for Aquatic Research at Keuka College. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Sellers. Dr. Sellers, can you hear us? Well, we will continue to work on that. I know he's there, so we'll chat with him in just a few moments. But Jim, I know—
Thanks for having me.
Oh, there he is. Hi. Very good.
Hi,
thanks.
Jim.
hi, Tim. How are you today?
There we go. Dr. Sellers, thanks for joining us today. At the beginning of the program, Jim and I were just discussing what the algae look like and why they've become a persistent problem. We've talked a little bit about climate change. I know that you've been studying this issue for a number of years, and as the algae continues to spread, how is your research changing? I know it's dangerous to speculate about certain things. There's a lot we don't know about the algal blooms, but has your research been changed based on the prevalence that we're seeing? Well, we are...
Yeah, it's a good question. We are changing a little bit how and what we're looking at. We've been doing a pretty intense monitoring program.
So listeners, I think we're working through some delay-related issues, so hang with us as we figure that out. Dr. Sellers, hang on the line with us until we can straighten out our technological problem. I'll ask Jim some more questions about the climate change-related factors. I was reading an article recently, I believe it was from the Finger Lakes Times, and it said some experts say nature will have an even greater impact on potential blooms in the future. So Jim Tierney, he's the Deputy Commissioner for Water Resources in the New York State DEC. He was talking at a symposium on harmful algal blooms in the Finger Lakes last week, and he said, quote, "There's something weird going on in water resources, and we have to get a handle on it. As fast as we work on this, climate change can take it away." He added that he learned that researchers expect to see a 5% increase in phosphorus in Chesapeake Bay by 2025, attributed just to climate change alone. So as someone in this community who's studying this issue, when you look at climate change and the impact it can have on possibly blowing up this issue, 5%, an increase in 5% phosphorus, for those of us who don't understand the science behind this, how big of a factor is that? How concerned should we be about that 5% number?
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I will say the Nature Conservancy, we're a science-based organization. Our mission is really, it's to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. And the way we do that is to develop science-based collaborative solutions to solve environmental challenges. And this is a perfect example of an environmental challenge that needs science and needs collaboration. I don't know exactly what 5% means. I know that we need to be doing all we can to reduce the amount of nutrients in our waters, because these are organisms that are able to outcompete other organisms when we have high nutrient environments, warm water temperatures. I guess I would say the academic institutions like Keuka College, SUNY ESF, Cornell, they're putting a lot of energy into understanding the science of how these organisms function. And the Nature Conservancy, we're seeing our job as to really get that, bring that science to stakeholder groups, find the solutions that we really need to be paying attention to. How can we limit the nutrients entering our waters? What strategies can we use on the land, in the water, to help start bringing down the levels of nutrients in our lakes? I don't know if that doesn't answer your question totally. Maybe Tim has a better sense of that.
Dr. Sellers, if you heard our question about climate change and the 5% increase in phosphorus that's being estimated in Chesapeake Bay by 2025, is that something that your group is working on and how that impacts the algal blooms?
Well, hopefully you can hear me.
I can hear you. Very
All
good.
Right. Okay. Sorry for that delay issue. So the, as Jim said, you know, that 5% can be translated in different ways. We are not looking necessarily at that particular number, but the bigger issues that Jim has talked about on climate change and how that can translate to more of these episodes. One is in the rainfall events that we've seen, and as Jim very accurately described, you know, with these more intense rainfall events, that allows all of this phosphorus and some of these other nutrients, phosphorus primarily, that are on the land to more efficiently, unfortunately, get into the lake. Also, if increasing temperatures can increase the lake temperatures over time, and that those are things, the nutrients, the temperatures, all of those things are great ingredients to grow blue-green algae.
So what can we do if just people living in the community, residents who are concerned? I know there are a group of more than 100 volunteers who are going out along the lakes trying to find evidence and spots where these algal blooms exist. But if you're someone who wants to try to help curb this problem and you're not a scientist, what can you do in your own backyard to help alleviate the problem, Dr. Sellers?
So I think probably the best thing is to understand that nutrients are the real driving factor in these blooms. Some of these lakes we know have had very high nutrients in past years. They recycle the nutrients they've got. But as you're mentioning earlier, last year we had a very unique event where all 11 Finger Lakes had these outbreaks, including Skinny Atlas and Cuga Lake, which typically do not have these outbreaks. So something different is going on. And you mentioned the conference last week where they said something is a little weird. Getting to your question, so what can you do? We're finding that these outbreaks are really in nearshore areas for the most part, as opposed to in the middle of the lake. And in Cuga Lake, where I do a lot of the research, we historically have found that our phosphorus levels are very low. And accordingly, we've really had no blue-green events until last year. What we're finding now is instead of looking generally at the water, we're getting hot spots. There are nearshore areas where we're apparently getting phosphorus that's coming in. And that gets us back to what that people can do. The ability to limit the runoff from land into the lake, the water will always do that, but they limit the ability to get dirt, the trees, propane tanks, as Jim said, to limit that is going to be the best. And that's doing very simple things. If you are on the lake, if you have a lake place or you're located close to creeks, is to ensure that you've got, for example, buffer strips, just areas of vegetation that occur between your land and the creek or the lake directly. So when the water does run off into the lake, and a lake is simply just a place where water runs off into and collects, that dirt, that earth, all of those things that could have the nutrients in it are going to be captured, or the majority of it can be captured before it gets into the lake. So really, you're only getting the water going into the lake and not the other things.
When you say something weird is going on with the water, and that's also the comment that was made by the deputy commissioner for the state DEC, what could it be that's so weird? Is it more than the increase in phosphorus? Is there something else that could be going on?
Well, we take weird pretty seriously here, and we don't know exactly. We are definitely seeing these spot issues, and I'm speaking now about like Skinny Atlas and Cuca in particular, because they're weird. We know that Seneca Lake has had a number of these outbreaks for a while, and then other Finger Lakes like Honeyoy have historically been very, very high in blue-green algae. So those aren't really weird to us. What we are seeing that is weird is we're not seeing the high levels of this phosphorus or nitrogen that would be indicative of a typical blue-green algae lake outbreak. And now we're looking, instead of looking at the lake as a whole, we are trying to look at specific areas. What are certain creeks or tributaries that are coming into lakes? Could certain ones be putting in hot spots of phosphorus that didn't occur earlier? Could the land use change? Our farming practices or agricultural practices, has something changed in recent time, or the buffer strips going along those things? So we're getting now to more of a micro level to try to back into what's causing some of these unique events.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, we clearly, I love Tim's point, we clearly have to work at multiple scales to combat these harmful algal blooms. You know, we have to work, first of all, at the local scale, as Tim is mentioning, and there's a lot of great science out there. Each of the Finger Lakes has a watershed management plan. We can pinpoint through those watershed management plans, which are the problem tributaries? Where is most of the sediment and nutrients coming into the lake? So where should we start our work? We can also tell, is it agricultural runoff? Is it runoff from wastewater, from septic systems that are failing? Is it lawn chemicals? I mean, we can figure that out. What really we need to do is to take that information, that science, figure out what the highest return on investment strategies are in each of the lakes, because each of the lakes are very different, and then build stakeholders that can really drive implementation towards the right mix of strategies that can start bringing nutrient levels down. I'll also say that's the local scale. We also need to be working at the state scale, the county scale. We need incentives, we need regulations that can help change behavior. We even need to be working at the federal scale on the Clean Water Act and incentives to help people improve their septic systems, let's say, or to help farmers implement a best management practice, a riparian buffer, which Tim mentioned, or a better manure management system. I mean, these are the types of solutions that we need as a society to start pulling together towards.
Related to those points, we just received an email from a listener who says, "None of my following points have any scientific backing, but I do follow common sense based on my lifetime experiences on a small lake." So this is someone that lives somewhere in the Finger Lakes, and she's listed about 17 different things she says could be contributing in her view. So I'd like to ask our guests if they think there's any merit behind any of them. Invasive species like zebra mussels, paved roads and driveways, an increase in them, boat traffic near the shores, boat exhaust, seawalls, boat dock roofs, farm pig and cow and horse runoff, leaking septic systems, as Jim just mentioned, shoreline construction, cutting weeds in any way, and then a few more. So these are things that this listener has noticed in her own space, and she thinks they could be contributing to these environmental changes. Is there any merit to any of those?
Jim? Oh, I think.
Oh, go ahead, Tim.
Oh, I was going to say, I think a number of those can be contributing factors depending on the intensity. So the first one she mentioned, invasive species and zebra and quagga mussels in particular, I think that is it's a relatively new thing to the Finger Lakes, you know, 15 years or so, a little longer than that, I guess. But they can work to the phosphorus, for example. When we see a lot of the zebra mussels here go through these boom and bust cycles over, you know, a number of years. And when we have these die-off events, we often see, for example, foaming on the lake. And that's when I get fun calls and people ask me who's been dumping the tide or the cheer into the lake. And it's not that at all. But when you get some of these die-off of zebra mussels, that releases a lot of different things into the lake. And one of those things would be organic phosphorus, which then later can be broken down and contribute to blue-green algae if the condition the other conditions are correct. The impervious roads in increasing, that certainly can influence what gets into the lake that we talked about earlier. So I think a number of those things have merit, either directly or indirectly. That's a it's a pretty wise insight that she's brought up.
Yeah, a lot of great ideas there. Let me comment on a few of those. The zebra mussel issue, the zebra quagga mussel issue, very important. We are finding in Lake Erie that zebra mussels, you know, they're voracious filter feeders. They're about the size of your fingernail, and they can filter each zebra mussel, quagga mussel, they're similar species, can filter about a quart of water a day. Just one of those little zebra mussels, and there's millions probably in a lake as big as Cayuga Lake or Keuka Lake. If they're filtering out phytoplankton, which cyanobacteria, blue-green algae are part of that, we find that they're not eating the blue-green algae. They're spitting those back out into the system. So if you think about an organism that's filtering out all your competitors, if you're and spitting you blue-green algae back into the water, you're creating a much better living environment for the blue-green algae. There's also, as Tim mentioned, there's some questions about what's the relationship between the zebra mussel and dissolved nutrients in the water? There's one of my colleagues on our board of the Nature Conservancy, Bruce Gilman, believes that's a research question that really needs to be answered. I think the septic issue too that was mentioned. So many of our homes on the Finger Lakes are pinned between the water, if you will, the shoreline and a bluff. And I think a lot of the septics, we have to ask ourselves, is there enough room for a functioning septic system on some of our Finger Lakes homes? And what can we be doing to help homeowners, lakeshore owners, upgrade those septic systems to a point where they would comply with state law? I know I've talked to some colleagues who have homes on the Finger Lakes, and they believe that one of the best things we can do is to have better septic systems. And I personally think that's the carrot and stick approach is what works there. We need some level of regulation to bring them up to a certain standard, and then some incentive to help homeowners get there. And I will say Governor Cuomo has put some funding on the table to help upgrade septic systems around the state. And I think that's something that we should be looking at. Mm-hmm. And I'll mention a couple other things. Lawn chemicals, I think, was mentioned.
Yes.
I think a lot of people who live on a Finger Lake want to have a lush green lawn. They're putting nutrients, fertilizer, which is essentially nutrients, onto their lawn, and that is often running right off into the lake. So I think we need better decision making about what lawn chemicals we're using. And then lastly, roadside ditches. So I think that was mentioned here. There are a lot of, in the Finger Lakes region, there are a lot of ditches along our roads that are regularly maintained by highway departments. There are ways we can manage those ditches in ways that hold back water, let the nutrients and sediment drop out, so it doesn't go right from the roadside ditch in a rainstorm into our lake, carrying all the nutrients and sediments with it.
If you're someone listening to this program and you're seeing some issues that may exist on your own property, you would like more information, you would like to make some changes, you need help, where's a good place to contact Jim? Who would you call if you thought, I need some more information, I'm not quite sure what to do, but I want to help alleviate this problem?
So I have a lot of respect for the lake associations around the Finger Lakes. Each lake has one. They really are great at disseminating information, what works, where can you go for more for resources. So I would start with your lake association, depending on what lake you live in. And I think they can point you in the right direction. But I think the academia, I think Keuka College, Finger Lakes Community College, SUNY ESF, they also have some great resources available.
And listeners, I'll remind you, there's a forum coming up on Monday, this coming Monday at the Littner Library on Keuka College campus. It's from 6:30 until 9. It's the Keuka Water Quality Summit, and it's sponsored by the Keuka Lake Association. You'll see some presentations by the Finger Lakes Institute, Keuka College Center for Aquatics Research, Keuka Lake Association, and the New York State DEC. Then there will be some panel discussions following those presentations where you can ask some questions if you have any that aren't answered today, or you have questions about your own property and how you can contribute to helping to alleviate the algae problem. That forum is free and open to the public. Again, it's this coming Monday on the Keuka College campus at 6:30, and we'll post some information about that on our podcast page for this broadcast. Before we take our short break, I have one more question for our guests about what to do about these algal blooms if you see them. And If you're near one, is there any way to combat it? Should you do something, or do you just have to wait for it to naturally go away? Is there a way to get rid of it on your own, or do we just have to wait it out and wait for it to dissipate on its own? And that word may not even be scientifically accurate, Jim.
There's really not much you can do once an outbreak starts. I think you do have to wait it out. You should avoid going into the water. You should keep your pets out of the water. But really, once the bloom starts, we just have to wait for wind action to change the water currents and push the algae down lower below the surface. Really, Tim, I don't know if you have a different thought there, but I don't think there's much you can do once it starts.
No, there really is not. I totally agree that if you see that, the important thing is to stay out of the water. many times in science, we have very complicated answers about things, but often, that's not very good for the public. In this case, common sense really does rule. If you do see this water and you see the algal blooms, very much like you described at the very beginning, stay out. And Jim says, keep your pets out. These are usually short-lived. On the order of 30 minutes, hours to a couple days. They really need those very calm conditions to maintain. And once you get a change in winds and currents, then everything sort of dissipates.
And there is one thing you should do, though, is report it. There is a hotline that DEC maintains. You can find it on the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation website. And they are asking people who are observing an algal bloom to report that, and they will come test it and find out what it is.
Great. That was my next question. So if you see one, report it to the DEC. And as I mentioned earlier, there's an all-volunteer trained, quote-unquote, army of about 100 people who are monitoring the shorelines of Seneca Lake for those harmful algal blooms. They started in late July. They were trained by the Seneca Lake Pure Waters Association. So if you're seeing people out looking in the water, they are trying to identify this algae and report it so we can alleviate the problem. I know a number of summer camps have had to limit swimming hours. Those are being reported. I know people get frustrated even on Lake Ontario when beaches close because of this problem. Do you see it as an ongoing issue, Jim? Are we making the right steps to alleviate it quickly in the next coming years, or is this going to be a long-term issue that will continue to plague our area?
This is not something that's going to go away quickly. We have a lot of work to do to begin reducing nutrients into our waterways. I will give another shout out to our state government. They have put some serious resources in play. The governor announced in December $65 million to start dealing with harmful algal blooms around the state, and five of the Finger Lakes are part of this, are eligible for some of these new funds. And I think that's a result, Megan, of just the importance that the Finger Lakes have. They're an iconic part of central and western New York. And, you know, I often say that our water is our most important asset here in central and western New York and in New York at large. But it's not if it's not clean. And if we really care about a healthy tourism industry, property values, recreation, we need our Finger Lakes to be clean. So I think this is a really important, should be an important priority for all of us, our government, the private sector, agriculture. And I think there is, the one thing I will say that these outbreaks have done is they've created a great deal of interest and a lot of momentum for finding solutions.
Tim, are you happy with that momentum? Do you think we're doing enough? I know you're doing a lot of research through the college, but when you look at it in terms of, you know, from a government standpoint, from residents in the area, are you happy with the momentum, or do you think we're not on the right track?
I'm pleased with the direction, definitely. Having Cuomo put in the $65 million to look at this in particular and HABs in particular is definitely the right direction we need to go to. Like any good scientist, they'll say that we don't have quite enough money. And we can always use more for research. Solving these problems is not going to be easy, and as Jim said, it's not going to be quick. But the best way is to get to where we want to be, and not just create Band-Aids, but actual real solutions, is to better understand how the system works. And it's a pretty complicated system. It's not just lakes. It's the lake and the environment around it, the watershed, the climate. There are a number of integrating factors that make it pretty complicated to understand not only just how it works, but then to determine what are some good solutions. But we do know some things, and these monies are creating the momentum that we want right now.
I'm seeing the phone starting to ring, so we'll take our short break. We'll come back to your phone calls. Again, you can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. More on the algae. We'll talk about health concerns, what you should do if you're exposed to one of these blooms, whether it's you, your family, or even a pet. More from our guests on the algae next. I'm Megan Mack. Thursday on The Next Connections, we talk to candidates for the Rochester City School Board. Three candidates are vying for two seats, and we'll have a chance to sit down with them to hear about their platforms and their priorities for the district. Melanie Funches, Beatrice LeBron, and Judith Davis will take your questions. Then in our second hour, our Summer of Food series continues with Where to Stop for a Bite Along the Thruway. We'll take a trip with our guests. You are listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking about harmful algal blooms in the Finger Lakes. This is the first year all 11 Finger Lakes have seen this problem. We're talking about the science behind the algae, some solutions, and conditions that create the algae with our two guests. And joining me in studio here in Rochester is Jim Howe. He's the director of the Nature Conservancy in Central and Western New York. And joining us from our studios at WEOS in Geneva, Dr. Tim Sellers, Associate Provost for Academic Innovation, Professor of Biology and Environmental Science, and Director of the Center for Aquatic Research at Keuka College. And listeners, I mentioned early in the hour that there's a forum coming up on Monday at Keuka College. If you don't want to wait until Monday, there's an event coming up this Friday, and Jim can tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, this is another event at Keuka College. The college has invited me, representing the Nature Conservancy, to come speak on what we're calling liquid assets, the Finger Lakes, how we can keep them healthy, what some of the threats are related to blue-green algae, and some of the solutions that we've put in play, the Nature Conservancy and others. And that's at 5 o'clock on Friday at the lower library at Keuka College. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Great. Yes. And we will post access or a link to that forum on our website as well. So listeners, if you're hearing this, you want to attend the forum on Friday or that on Monday, you can find more information on our website. It's wxxinews.org/connections. We have some calls coming in. So up first on the phones is Liam in Rochester. Go ahead, Liam.
Yeah, I just had two questions for you guys. The first one was, after you see and everything, I know you're saying there's limited swim hours. Like, is there a specific amount of time you're supposed to actually wait before you can go in the water? Or is, like, your skin pretty, a good defensive for it and won't, like, absorb?
Good question. There's not a set time at all. First of all, so blue-green algae typically put out toxins, but they don't always. And the kinds and the amount of toxins they put out varies, too. So, it makes it a little more complicated. But The best rule of thumb is waiting at least a day after you've had an event and you've got a day of clear water. That would be pretty good. If there's anything that looks odd, don't go in.
Okay. Liam, gotcha. Did you have a second question?
Yeah. So I do a lot of home renovations and everything. And I know a few of the houses I worked on, I think over in Seneca Lake, Canisius Lake, was it? There was a lot of calcium buildup, a lot of the pipes that run off into the water, and I'm assuming that calcium is also where the phosphate comes from. Do you ever guys think of, like, maybe a way to kind of redirect that water into a different way so it's not just all these houses aren't just running off into the lake that might help some of the problem with the phosphate?
Thanks, Liam.
So you're seeing a lot of calcium in pipes in Canisius?
Yeah, so the houses have like the springs underneath them or whatnot, and there's a lot of runoff water that will come out from underneath the house into the lake. And a lot of them, I've broken off pipes where I thought it was cement, and I'm picking up blocks of this calcium and walking them up to the garbage to throw them out. And my boss was like, yeah, that happens a lot with a lot of these houses. There's a calcium buildup. You got to constantly replace the pipes. So I was wondering maybe if there was a way to kind of redirect that water so it's not going into the lake, because I feel like, that might help a little bit with the phosphate problem.
I think the good news is that there was probably not much phosphorus associated with those calcium buildups or those mineral buildups. But in general, keeping that out is a good thing. One of the things we talked about a little earlier was this idea of buffer strips. Jim mentioned riparian buffer strips, basically just vegetation between more than just a lawn between, in this case, the house and the lake. When water runs off, and it gets into that vegetation, it acts as sort of a natural sponge, and the water runs through, and that vegetation typically uptakes a lot of those other minerals that happen to be in there. So that's a very, very simple way to do it on a house-by-house basis.
What about the houses that are, like, really close? Could you do, like, a seaweed in the water or something? Because I know, like, some house I've worked on, it's literally house and then the retainer wall and then water.
That's a little more difficult. Going back, I think the big thing Jim was mentioning earlier, how do we control the waste from the houses? So making sure that you've got really great septic systems, that they're up to date, they're functioning well. Or if you scale up a bit more, many lakes are trying to get in and put in sewers. That's obviously more costly and long-term solution, but it's a fantastic long-term way to reduce this. On a particular house, that becomes a little more difficult, but just good management overall, I think, can help.
Cool. All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks, Liam. Thanks for your call. Dr. Sellers, I know we only have a couple minutes left with you, so before we let you go, I know Jim would like to talk about some solutions. So we discussed during our short break green infrastructure and some of the other options that you at the Nature Conservancy are discussing. And I'd like to bring Tim into this conversation as well to discuss, you know, we've had a conversation about what the everyday person can do. But when we look at this from the bigger picture, and we're talking about collaboration between governments and scientists and organizations like yours, Jim, what are you envisioning?
So we do have some examples, success stories. And I think, you know, all of us at the Nature Conservancy, that's what we're here to do. I mean, I feel like there are lots of organizations that are studying right now. What's the science behind these outbreaks? What's driving them? But when it comes to really fixing problems, that's where the Nature Conservancy really, that's our niche. And we've done some really interesting work at Honeoye Lake recently. So Honeoye, the shallowest Finger Lake, it's only about 30 feet deep, chronic blue-green algae outbreak issues. The Nature Conservancy, working with stakeholders, we were able to get some science that told us, partnering with academics, that one particular tributary was the chief source of nutrients entering Honeoye Lake. With that information, then, we worked closely with the New York State DEC, the Honeoye Lake Association of Shoreline Owners, the local Soil and Water Conservation District, Finger Lakes Community College, to come up with a re-engineered stream channel. So basically what was happening was there was previously a farm at the south end of the lake on this one tributary. The farmer had dug a ditch to move the water off the farm as quickly as he could. And essentially what that was doing was mainlining water and nutrients into Honeoye Lake. So what we realized we could do is we could restore the natural flow, the natural stream channel, the meander that you see in most streams. We actually built almost a mile, about 4,000 feet of new stream channel with funding from the state and some private funds that the Nature Conservancy raised. And that single, what we call green infrastructure, natural floodplain restoration, is now removing about 30% of the nutrients that enter Honeoye Lake every day. So this is a really important, I think, tool to have in the toolbox. Is nature cleanses itself. If we have healthy wetlands, healthy forests, healthy floodplains, they can absorb nutrients before they enter the lake. And I think that's a really important tool that we'd like to see deployed more frequently across the Finger Lakes. We are now working with the Canandaigua Lake stakeholder groups on a similar project at the south end of Canandaigua Lake in the Naples Creek Valley. So this is something that we do feel we can scale up around the Finger Lakes based on our success at Honeoye.
Tim, do you see some of these green solutions in your work as well? Are you seeing examples in addition to those that you think are effective or could be effective?
I think those are excellent examples. And as Jim said, the Nature Conservancy sits such at a prime place to collect and understand science and then work with the stakeholder groups to then create these real actionable plans that make a true difference. Most of my work is in Cuca Lake, and we are very different than the Honeoye Lake. In some ways, we're kind of the polar opposites. So we're looking at what are some different issues. We don't have that one a main pipe, so to speak, that's doing that. So we're trying to look at some smaller solutions, but we are just now trying to identify where and how this is working. Honeyoy has been, as Jim said, a known a known lake with bluegreen for years and years. Cuca, Skinny Alice, and a few others were a little new to this game, and we're going to have to look at maybe some of those solutions that Jim talked about, maybe scaled down or distributed in different ways. So it, on the science side, it's very exciting. I just hope from a public side that we can make a difference in a pretty quick way.
Tim, I know we have to let you go, but thank you so much for taking the time to join us for this conversation. If people have more questions specific to the research, what's the best way to reach you?
Sure. Email is great. That's probably the best way. I work at Cuca College, so they can you can simply Google Tim Sellers and Cuca, and I'm sure I'll pop up somewhere. Ben, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Sellers, joining us from WEOS in Geneva. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Jim, I know we are seeing some comments from listeners. They have questions about the health concerns related to the algae. And as Tim mentioned, they don't always release toxins. But when they do and you've been exposed, what should you be looking for in terms of symptoms? Maybe you've gone to a camp in the Finger Lakes, you were in the water, didn't realize you were exposed to the algae, got out as soon as you did realize that. But what should you be concerned about? What kinds of symptoms should you be looking for?
First of all, let me clarify. Megan is not saying that I've been exposed. She's
you,
saying...
I'm sorry. Did I? Yes. No, the collective you, the hypothetical person who has experienced this issue.
there are toxins. It is true. They don't always release them. And I don't think we understand. I don't think the scientific community understands why they release the toxins sometimes and why they don't other times. These are, the toxin's name, though, I understand, is called microcystins. They can be liver toxins, neurotoxins, dermatoxins. Swimmer's itch actually comes from these. So there are a variety of different health impacts of those. I think it's, we can treat, there are water treatment plants that can deal with these issues, but only if they're overwhelmed by them, they cannot. And the famous case, I think it was in 2014 in Toledo, where the Toledo water supply was shut down for 3 days by a massive bloom of blue-green algae in the west end of Lake Erie. That was driven primarily by agricultural runoff from the Maumee River, which flows through Toledo. So there are the health impacts, I think, are understood pretty well. I think as long as we're smart and practice safe policies, if we see the blooms, stay out of the water, keep your pets out of the water, and don't drink it either. If you have a water source from the lake, I would recommend buying spring water if you can.
Mm-hmm. Does it affect people more severely than pets or vice versa?
My understanding is it affects pets more because pets will come out of the water with the blue-green algae on them, and in grooming themselves, licking their fur, they tend to ingest more of it.
Mm-hmm. So what should you do if you're a person or a pet? What do you, can you treat yourself at home? Is this a visit to the doctor? How extreme does the treatment plan go?
Yeah, that's a great question that I do not have an answer for, Megan.
That's okay. I appreciate when people say, I don't know. And I don't know either, listeners, so we will try to find the answer for you and continue this conversation. And I know that something that you've mentioned, Jim, is that the DEC is working closely with local groups. We had hoped to include someone from the DEC on this program today, but they were unavailable. My colleague down the hall, Veronica Volk, mentioned that there's state funding for resolving this problem, as you also said, Jim, but what do you hope to see in terms of the collaboration with the DEC? How would you like that to see ramped up, and what do you think we need to do more closely working with the state?
Well, I firmly believe that public-private partnerships are the way we solve most of our challenges. I will call out the New York State DEC and the governor's office for all they're doing on this issue. One of the things that the state is doing right now is helping stakeholder groups develop what are called 9-element plans, or for short, 9E plans. And what they essentially do is they identify where are the chief sources of nutrients coming from in these lakes, what are some potential solutions for them, and how can we make sure that all the right people are at the table talking about these solutions? Because these are not going to be easy solutions. If we're talking about, you know, working with the agricultural industry on maybe removing some land from production, or changing the way agriculture is practiced on a certain farm, or helping hundreds of homes upgrade their septic systems, or even as Tim said, maybe even implement some sewer systems in some places. So we are going to need more investment. We're going to need the right policies, I would say, at the state and local level to drive behavior. We're going to need funding in place. We're going to need science pointing us in the right direction and the right people at the table to make sure that everyone feels involved in the decisions. And then lastly, I would say, we're going to need good governance structures. Because these are decisions that are crossing municipal boundaries, often crossing county boundaries. Some of the Finger Lakes are three and four counties jurisdiction have. They have three or four counties, different counties have jurisdiction over the watershed. So we need to be all pulling together.
Do you think the collaboration so far has been effective?
I would say yes. I'm really impressed with what I've seen at Honeoye and Canandaigua. Skinny Atlas now. Skinny Atlas is the source of drinking water for the city of Syracuse. It's one of only two unfiltered water supplies for a large municipality in the state of New York, the other being, of course, New York City. So there's a lot at stake in Syracuse, and I've seen a lot of momentum there, a lot of interest in finding solutions. And I will say one of the things that the Nature Conservancy feels that we can have, we can really add value is making sure that we're focused on the right solutions and not trying to just spread our dollars out among everything that's in front of us. Let's focus on where we're really going to have the impact, where we're going to get the highest return on investment. And to that effect, we recently have hired a new person to work in the Eastern Finger Lakes region. And her job is going to be really to work with stakeholders, finding those highest return on investment strategies, and then making things happen on the ground and working with partners to measure impact and success.
A few more of your comments before we lose the hour. This is an email from Kevin. He says, at the start of my career in the early 1980s, I worked on an EPA 208 urban runoff project. We learned that the population density was directly correlated to nutrient concentrations in urban runoff. As the Finger Lakes become more deeply and densely populated, it seems absolutely certain that unless we capture and treat stormwater runoff, nutrient concentrations will continue to increase in the Finger Lakes.
Yes, great comment. Urban stormwater runoff is a big issue, non-point runoff. That means essentially when a rainfall hits a parking lot or a street, it captures oil, sediment, other nutrients, and carries it directly into the water. Our finding in the Finger Lakes is actually we're seeing more. The Finger Lakes region is primarily agricultural, and I think my belief is that we really need to be working with ag in a big way, the agricultural industry, farmers, associations, as well as urban situations as well, too. Most of the bigger cities in the Finger Lakes are at most of the cities in the Finger Lakes are at the north and south ends. The Finger Lakes all flow north. So the cities at the north end, like Geneva, for example, Canandaigua, any runoff from those cities is typically going north, not into the Finger Lake itself. Watkins Glen, Ithaca, that's a different story.
Jim, throughout the years that you've been working on this issue, what has been the biggest surprise for you? You're seeing a lot of different facts arise, new information every year, but what has been the one thing that has really taken you aback and thought, wow, I didn't realize that this was contributing to the problem, or something along those lines?
For me, I think it's the realization that more and more of our precipitation now is coming in these intense downbursts, and that is probably a key driver that has changed. And I guess the surprise there, Megan, is that this has really happened in the last 10 or 15 years. I feel like we're really starting to see the precipitation cycles change, and that was so quickly able to drive a change in blue-green algal composition in the Finger Lakes.
And yesterday, what happened with the flooding in the Finger Lakes, certainly not helping on Seneca Lake. If this continues, if we continue to see these downpours, how much will this problem be accelerated? Will it reach a point where we cannot control it, or are you confident that we can maintain a handle on it?
I'm hoping that the realization now that our lakes are vulnerable will change behavior and bring about some of these enabling conditions we talked about. Good science, stakeholders working together, policies in place at multiple scales, action on the ground, and governance structures. I think that is that's what we need to see happen. And maybe this has been a wake-up call for us, and I hope we heed it.
Listeners, if you have more questions about these algal blooms, not just in the Finger Lakes, but in Lake Ontario and in other places, there are two opportunities for you to ask those in the next coming days. I know Jim will be speaking at one on Friday.
Friday, 5 p.m. at Keuka College in the library.
5 p.m. Keuka College Library. You can hear from Jim Howe. And then on Monday at the Keuka Water Quality Summit, you'll hear from a number of organizations, presentations by the Finger Lakes Institute, the Keuka College Center for Aquatics Research, the Keuka Lake Association, and the state DEC. That's Monday, this coming Monday, the 20th, at Littner Library on the Keuka College campus. That begins at 6:30. It runs through 9 o'clock. After those presentations, there will be a panel discussion where you can ask your questions. And both of these events, I believe, Jim, are free.
Free and open to the public.
So listeners, check those out. We'll post those on our podcast page. I'd like to thank all of you for your very interesting and insightful questions and comments this hour. And Jim, if people are hoping to connect with the Nature Conservancy, where can they find you?
You can find us at nature.org, nature.org. You can also, if you look for the Central and Western New York chapter, you can reach me or any of our team in Rochester, Ithaca, and Oswego County. We'd be happy to talk to anyone.
Nature.org, listeners. Jim Howe from the Nature Conservancy, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks a lot. Enjoyed talking with you.
And our thanks also to Dr. Tim Sellers from Keuka College joining us from WEOS today. We had a lot of people working on the show today. Thanks to my colleague Rob Braden, our engineer, on phones today, Randy Gorbman, Mike Black, Juan Vasquez. Our thanks to Greg Cotterill and Kelly Walker at WEOS helping us make this happen. I'm Megan Max sitting in for Evan Dawson today. Have a great afternoon, everybody, and thank you for listening to member-supported public radio.